Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. In just a few minutes, you will hear the testimony given in Kansas City at the National Right to Life Annual Convention, during which their executive board, their 50 board members from the states around the country, decided whether or not to remove Colorado Right to Life from its state affiliate status. And I was able to present the moral and spiritual argument that Colorado Right to Life wanted them to consider. And we have that. We have a recording of that. And so we'll play that in just a moment. Also, I received a call today from the elder of a church, a Bible church. And this is what he said. He said, Bob, we need to get your open letter to Dr. Dobson. We need to get that in Christianity Today, the magazine. He gave me the circulation numbers. This would be the most significant publication yet. And he's gone ahead and checked the pricing, and it would be, what? It'd be a lot more money than anything we've purchased so far, advertising-wise. And I told him that's a lot of money for this effort. And he said, I will make a commitment. I am working in my church. We will raise more than half of it. We will raise more than half so that Bob Enyart Live would only have to raise a few thousand dollars. So, if there's anyone out there who would like to see our momentum continue, and let me tell you, there is extraordinary momentum, extraordinary. Please call us or go to our website. The website is kgov.com. You could go to the store. You could click on donate, put in any amount you want, and then in a note field, put you'd like this to go toward the Christianity Today ad, the open letter. If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278. Of course, that's the number to call in to be a caller on the radio show. That's the number if you'd like to order something, if you'd like to get one of our catalogs, if you'd like to get one of our 40 Years in the Wilderness DVDs that we are making as fast as we can make them. We make them by the hundreds and ship them out. So please be a part of this if you can. And then one other thing I'd like to tell you before we get to the testimony. Two things. One is about the Jesus film that's been playing around the world for 30 years. But secondly, I am headed to Indiana a week from Thursday, and I will be presenting Focus on the Strategy 2, this presentation on how to stop abortion, at six different events, from Chicago to Toledo, Ohio, to Kentucky, to church in Indiana, in Ohio, and we have just the most wonderful opportunities. So please pray for that trip. And if you know anyone in the Indiana area who might want to get involved, have them check out our announcement at kgov.com, kgov.com, and Indiana or that region of the country, and they might be able to come to one of the presentations next weekend, okay, beginning on Thursday through Sunday night. Okay, now, the Jesus film, you've heard about it? It was produced when? Way back. I remember I was still a young Christian in the late 70s. I became a Christian in 1973, and Campus Crusade for Christ produced this film back in 1979. And it was such an extraordinary tool to bring people to the Lord that they began translating it into other languages. So it premiered in 1979, and then by, what was it, within a year, they had produced the first 30 translations of the Jesus film. And it has been playing in cinemas and universities and churches all over the world for all these years. And now billions of people, that's with a B, billions of people have watched this film. More people have watched the Jesus film than if you look at the top Oscar films like Gone with the Wind or The Sound of Music. Some people watch that hundreds of times. Or The Wizard of Oz. More people have watched the Jesus film. And it's so exciting. For example, 1994, okay? 1994, Kashmir-speaking people in India, that year marked the first time Kashmiri Indians could watch the Jesus film in their own language, and that was the 300th translation. 300 languages by 1994. And they have been working to continue this translation effort. It's similar as with the Bible. The Bible's available in, what is it, 1,100 languages so far? 1,100? There is a project underway by Wycliffe Bible Translators. They have 6,000 people working to translate the Bible into every language used all over the world. And that's exciting. They hope to have that completed by about 2025. Well, by 1996, the Karamojong people in Uganda. Have you ever heard of the Karamojong people in Uganda? Well, by 1996, they were able to listen and watch the Jesus film in their own tongue. By 1999, the film's audio track had been translated into 500 languages, where people in aggressive native tribes are able to watch the Jesus film. And now that billions of people, billions with a B, have watched the Jesus film over the past 28 years, and more than 200 million people have come up after the movie to make a commitment to Jesus Christ, to trust him for salvation, they are now approaching the 1,000th translation. 1,000 versions of this movie, the Jesus film, and that is just absolutely extraordinary. So we praise God for that, that the gospel is going out. And with the pro-life movement, what happened many years ago, 30 years ago, is that National Right to Life took the leadership, the spiritual and moral leadership of the pro-life movement, and they handed it over to lawyers. And lawyers might be really good at finding loopholes and at dragging things out for years and decades and making a lot of money off of people's suffering and misery, but lawyers are not especially good at knowing right from wrong. That is not something that is taught in law school. And so the ACLJ, American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulo, Americans United for Life, Focus on the Family, National Right to Life, the Christian Coalition, these organizations have taken the spiritual and moral leadership of the body of Christ and handed it off to lawyers. And that has led to a devastating failure, long-term failure of the pro-life movement and its other consequences. Believers, rank-and-file Christians in the body of Christ, are struggling to understand the difference between right and wrong. They're struggling to understand that. Now, I don't know exactly the details of what happened to Billy Graham's wife this past week. I don't know the exact details, but according to the media reports, the family asked early in the week, last week, as we're in Kansas City setting up, they asked that Billy Graham's wife's food and water be withdrawn. And that's a moral issue. It is okay to let a dying person die. There is a grace pastor in Denver, Colorado, who right now, tonight, is suffering. He lost oxygen to his brain for about 5 minutes. And his family called and asked, Bob, could you come and talk to our family? We had a meeting in a conference room of this hospital in Denver last night. And they said, we are feeling pressured by the staff, by the doctors, to urge our father to basically kill him, to not feed him or give him liquids. They want us to be convinced to give up. And we feel like we're being manipulated and we're not being told the truth about his actual condition. They say he's brain dead. And, you know, there are quite a few people who have been diagnosed as brain dead, including three Japanese in North America that went back to Japan. They recovered. So how brain dead is that? And there have been a number of people who were brain dead for some long period of time who recovered. And a number of them have survived after they recovered, you know, for months and perhaps some for years. So we don't always trust the first assessment of brain dead. But what I told the family is this. It's okay to let a dying person die. If somebody is truly irreversibly dying, it's okay to let them die. People in comas, Terry Schiavo, handicapped people are not dying any more than you and I are. They are not ill. And they don't have a fatal illness. They're handicapped. And you don't starve to death the handicapped in order to alleviate the family suffering. So the family doesn't have to struggle. So if someone is dying and their body cannot receive food and water, then you don't have to shove food and water into a virtual corpse that's being kept alive by machines. That would be perverse. But you do not starve to death someone who is handicapped or severely injured. You don't starve them to death. You don't need to keep people alive on machines if they are irreversibly dying. And it's sad that Billy Graham's family didn't make it clear, that moral implication of that decision, it wasn't made clear. They said that early in the week, and that could be Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, we don't know, early in the week, the family asked for food and water to be withdrawn from their mother, grandmother. Okay, so that happened. Wife and mother. So that happened. And then on Thursday, apparently, is when she passed away. So it is wrong to starve someone to death. That is wrong. And if you think you're alleviating their suffering, you don't kill someone. Mercy killing is what the Nazis did. That's what the euthanasia movement wants. That's what the pro-abortion, Planned Parenthood, NARAL now, and the feminists, and the homosexuals, and the humanist wants. So that is not what Christian pro-lifers do. We don't put people out of their misery. Jesus said, carry my cross. He didn't say, if the suffering gets rough, then kill one another. He didn't say that. That's not an option. So, of course, I hope and expect, especially with Frankie Graham involved, that what happened was utterly moral and right and honoring to God. But it would have been so good to make the moral clarity of the issue clear and say we did not starve our mother to death. We didn't do that, but her body was rejecting the food and water, so we cut back, but we don't know the particulars. Okay. So now we're going to listen to the testimony that I gave at the National Right to Life annual convention in Kansas City last week when they were considering whether or not to kick Colorado Right to Life out of their national organization. And so we went there not to beg and plead and say, oh, we follow all the rules that you have set out for us. We went there to lay out the moral and spiritual case of where they have dishonored God, where they have failed the unborn, and how they are leading the pro-life movement into a direction that does not lead to victory but failure. So let's listen to this testimony.
Today, he's Charlie Denver is accompanied by Bob Enyart from Colorado, and he has asked that they share the mic during their 15 minutes. So, if you gentlemen would come up.
I am Bob Enyart, a member of Colorado Right to Life, and one of the co-signers with Colorado Right to Life of the ad that was just mentioned. You have to be pretty angry as a pro-life organization to threaten to sue another pro-life organization, and it's my job to explain to you why we are angry. Colorado Right to Life put National Right to Life on notice of an intent to sue, partly because of fraudulent fundraising. Dr. Dobson, on Monday, put on his website in writing and sent out an email blast to hundreds of thousands of pro-lifers that the partial birth abortion ban does not save a single baby. Not one. We have been documenting that admission from leader after leader in the pro-life movement after 15 years since that technique was introduced through the media. We've been documenting the truth after 15 years of an effort that has raised over $250 million by our major pro-life leaders and organizations. And only now, after all that time was wasted and all that money raised, only now are our leaders being compelled to admit the truth that this effort resulted in a ban and a ruling that does not have the authority to save one innocent child. And that should have been told to the donors from the beginning. It's time to evaluate the quarter century strategy and goals of National Right to Life. Two strategy goals. First, since Republicans tend to be pro-life, by electing them...
Madam Chair,
I would like to explain why you have been put on notice for this lawsuit.
That's not the purpose of the presentation.
Well, sure it is. We are being disenfranchised from Colorado Right to Life because of our strategy disagreement with the committee. And if you don't want to hear what our strategy disagreement is, then perhaps you could stop this message. But this is an 8-minute message that I beg you to listen to.
Now, presenter is within his bounds. Thank you.
National Right to Life has a two-pronged strategy. First, since Republicans tend to be pro-life, by electing them, we will get judges who honor a culture of life. Two, if we regulate child killing, there will be virtually no downside, and we will end abortion more quickly. Here's the reality. Remember that it was a Republican governor of Colorado, John Love, who signed the first law permitting abortion for rape, incest, and health. Remember, it was Republican Justice Harry Blackmun who wrote Roe v. Wade. Remember that it was a Republican majority who voted the 7-2 Roe v. Wade law into force. It is a Republican judge who wrote the recent Ninth Circuit ruling against the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. The federal judiciary is overwhelmingly pro-choice. If you've noticed that, recall that Republican presidents have nominated 60% of the federal judiciary. 60% are our judges from our pro-life presidents, and they are overwhelmingly pro-choice. Terri Schiavo was killed by judicial fiat. And did you notice who the judges were who ruled to kill her, starting with George Greer, Republican pro-life judge? It went to the 11th Circuit. We have six judges on the 11th Circuit, appointed by Ronald Reagan, George Bush, and George W. Bush. We have six judges. They could have stopped it. Every one of them voted to allow Terri Schiavo to be killed. All six of our Republican pro-life judges, including William Pryor. Seven of the nine Supreme Court justices sitting today are Republican justices, and not one supports personhood. Not one. Pro-lifers are deceived into thinking, for example, that Antonin Scalia is pro-life. But I want to quote to you what he said at the Pew Forum in 2002. He said this. He said, "I will strike down a law that is the opposite of Roe v. Wade." Those who want every state to prohibit abortion are wrong. That's what Antonin Scalia said at the Pew Forum. No state has the right to set up extermination camps or abortion clinics. The misguided strategy of the pro-life movement by regulating child killing has destroyed the ability of pro-lifers to understand right from wrong, and we can't even any longer discern what it means to be pro-life. The partial birth abortion ruling did not ban partial birth abortion. It modified it by 4 inches, repeatedly stating that the abortionist could pull the baby out to the navel and then kill the baby. That is not a ban. They say the abortionist could do a partial birth abortion, a standard textbook one, if the mother's overdilated and the baby comes out to the neck and they could kill it. And these things have been obvious since the beginning of the ban. And we have provided cover to pro-choice politicians, even Democrats, who would say, I'm not an extremist. I supported the partial birth abortion ban. We wasted 15 years while 20 million kids have died. We spent $250 million as an industry for a ban that does not have the authority to save one life. You guys are worried about what's growing out in Colorado. I'll tell you what's growing in Washington, D.C. It's called the abortion weed. Child killing regulations, that's what National Right to Life is really good at. Child killing regulations prune the abortion weed and strengthen its roots.
It's correct that during this time we would not have a speaker that would be going against or taking issue with the aims and goals of National Right to Life. And calling National Right to Life an organization that supports child killing.
No, I didn't say that, sir. Child killing regulations.
You said this right now.
Child killing regulations. Of course, National Right to Life seeks to eventually uphold the personhood of the child. But National Right to Life supports child killing regulations. And I'm almost done. Child killing regulations prune the abortion weed and strengthen its root. This approach makes abortion appear more humane. We don't have partial birth abortion. And it makes it appear more reasonable to the voting public and our officials because there are waiting periods and parental consent. Yet National Right to Life has never once, as far as we can document, even acknowledged the potential downside of child killing regulations. I'd like to quote to you from the Indiana Code on Informed Consent, Title 16, Section 34. Abortion shall be criminal. This will keep abortion legal in Indiana once Roe v. Wade is overturned. Our laws will keep abortion legal. And I'll quote to you from Professor Charles Rice, Notre Dame Law School, who has stated explicitly that when Roe v. Wade is overturned, hundreds of our pro-life laws will keep abortion legal. Here's an example from Indiana, Title 16. Abortion shall be a criminal act except if the woman has filed her consent. What that means is the day Roe v. Wade is overturned, that one pro-life law will keep abortion legal in Indiana. And I have a question for you. How many children will be killed after Roe v. Wade is overturned by the authority of our pro-life laws? Dr. Rice said, and I quote, if the court says the states can regulate abortion, that's the equivalent of overturning Roe v. Wade, then to protect the right to life, you would have to get rid of the pro-life abortion laws. Because in Indiana, they could continue killing children by our authority that we put on the books. And I ask you this, have you once heard that brought up as a concern by Wanda Franz? Once. Have you once heard that brought up as a concern by this committee, National Right to Life? How many months, years, or decades will it take us to repeal our pro-life laws? Sir, you're laughing. You're laughing. Do you think that when the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, that law will not keep abortion legal in Indiana? It will.
No.
And I'm done. I'm done.
All right. Then we immediately began to invite conventioneers, members of National Right to Life, those who had paid $95, $110 to attend their convention. We began inviting them up to the 40th floor, 40 floors above the National Right to Life Convention, and to our Colorado Right to Life Hospitality Suite. And they voted to kick us out, a founding member of National Right to Life. John Archibald, we've interviewed him, and he resigned. He resigned in protest from the National Right to Life board because they began to dishonor God by violating Do Not Murder by advocating child killing regulations, laws that end with, and then you could kill the baby. And they said this was the way to incrementally stop abortion. They said this was the way. And by the way, Planned Parenthood's annual report for this past year says they performed the most abortions, surgical abortions, in their history. The most abortion, hundreds of thousands of abortions just by Planned Parenthood. And, well, the industry is maturing, it's consolidating, and Planned Parenthood is the most successful of the abortion providers. So that's one reason why the number of abortions they're performing is increasing. But John Archibald said it's immoral and the strategy is wrong because it's not going to work. Because you can't build a secure environment for the unborn on a foundation of secular humanism. You can't do it. You have to build it on a foundation of God's authority on the personhood of the child because of the God-given right to life. There is no other foundation on which we could protect unborn children. And National Right to Life has chosen a secular foundation of humanism, and now there is a division within the pro-life movement, and there is the pro-life industry, which raised about $250 million over a 15-year period in order to regulate this form of child killing. And the fruit of that is the partial birth abortion ruling, which is more brutal than Roe v. Wade. It's a ruling more brutal than Roe v. Wade. It is a ruling that is more brutal than the partial birth abortion technique that it regulates. And it's a ruling that we were told to celebrate by National Right to Life and Focus on the Family. We were told it was a pro-life ruling from pro-life judges. And we wasted that time when we could have actually been fighting for the personhood of the child and the God-given right to life of the unborn child. And we could have used the horror of partial birth abortion to advocate personhood. But we didn't do it. We used it to advocate a law that says you could pull the baby out to the belly button and then cut off his legs. That's what we did. And that was despicable. And so now we need your help. If you'd like to help us get our open letter to Dr. Dobson and Christianity Today, please call us and help us. We need to raise with the elder of the Bible Church who called earlier today. He committed to raise over half of the money. And so now we need a few thousand more dollars. If you can help with $300, $500, $1,000, maybe there's somebody out there who'll say, Bob, I'll pay the balance, the $3,000, and you get on to the next project. We need your help. Please call us 800-8-NYARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. Or go to our website, kgov.com. And my inbox is overwhelmed. I've got hundreds of emails. But to contact me, bob@kgov.com. It's pretty easy. bob@kgov.com. Please help us. If you're in Indiana or the region, look for me this weekend. And Maranatha, what a great school.